This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Your story about winter preparedness made me laugh, thinking about when I first moved to Chicago. And for the first time in my life, I guess I wouldn't have access to a tractor to be able to get out through the snow in the wintertime. And my dad said, you better take a log chain with you.
Oh,
and I did.
Yeah.
And I still have that log chain, by the way.
Really?
A good heavy-duty chain. You never know when you might slide into the ditch.
I know. I remember before there were winter tires, you bought tire chains and put them on the car until the city started to outlaw them. Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember it well.
Yeah. Yes.
And then my mother, who had been in nurse's training in Chicago many years before, she said, you know, the traffic gets bad. You may need a pee bottle. And she was right. By the way, how long were you in your car on Lakeshore?
Wow.
Talk about winter preparedness.
Yeah, no, I wasn't prepared at all.
Did you have all of your basic needs?
No. Now, you remember how many times I would step out of the car to do reports, right? There was a reason why I had to step out of the car to do the reports.
Right on Lakeshore Drive?
Well, if I stood the right way, it just went with the rest of the hail and sleet that was...
Oh, mercy. Well, that's TMI. TMI. We'll catch up with you a little bit later, sir.
All right, buddy.
Roger Maddish on duty in the newsroom. Orion Samuelson joins us this morning on the morning show, too, in this segment, sponsored by Wink Products.
Welcome to Samuelson Says. Hello, everyone. I'm Orion Samuelson with a look at the impact of FFA members in this country. I've been on the air for the folks at Wink Products Company for decades, and I'm just delighted because this is one of those Midwest success stories. Wink is a family-owned corporation in rural Eldora, Iowa that has manufactured specialty cleaning products for 70 years. And today, Wink is a nationally recognized brand because Wink products work. Learn more about the family of Wink products at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. I can, we will. I can, we will. I heard that over and over again at the National FFA Convention in Indianapolis a week ago. The National FFA Officer Team chose that as the theme for this year's convention. I can, we will. And that's certainly true of FFA. As an individual, you can make a difference. But as a group of individuals, you can really make a difference. And in the case of FFA, there are numbers that we don't have time to report during our coverage of the convention on RFD TV. So let me review some very important numbers. Total membership of the FFA, 653,359. This comes at a time when we are seeing a declining number of farmers and ranchers on the land. But in the last decade, the last 10 years, FFA has had a 31% increase in membership. And it's interesting to look at some of the numbers. 51% of the members are male, 42% are female. And local FFA chapters located in rural areas for 55%. 19% of the chapters are located in town, 12% in suburban communities, and 5% in the city. And my home city, Chicago, along with Philadelphia and some other cities, do have large FFA memberships. But another important part is the alumni membership. 344,239 of us who were benefited by FFA are now involved in the alumni associations across the country, helping to support FFA members and their project work. This is why I continually say that FFA is one of the best youth leadership training programs in the world. I see that every year at the National FFA Convention and say, they can't get better than this year. But they do. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
Corn and soybean growers, we invite you to come and learn how to turn practical data and technology into profitable decisions at the second annual Ag Data Conference. It'll be going on at Coralville, Iowa, coming up the end of November. Making sense of precision technology and the data layers derived from it are key to improving your corn and soybean return on investment. And the best way to learn is from actual experience of other farmers and their advisors, along with a hands-on look at the data products, the drones, and the services that drive success. You'll gain insight and more from the Ag Data Conference, designed by the editors of Farm Progress Information brands Corn Soybean Digest and Farm Futures. Get all the information of the Ag Data Conference by going to the website, theagdataconference.com. It's November 29th and 30th at the Coralville Marriott Hotel near Iowa City, Iowa. TheAgDataConference.com.
To talk about the market situation this weekend, Jim McCormick joins us from Allendale Incorporated. Jim, how have you been?
I've been very good. Thank you for having me on, Max.
This is an interesting autumn, isn't it? It's a little bit quieter, I suppose, around your office, is it not?
It is very, very quiet. I mean, for the last 60 days, it seems like this market has just gone dead. And, you know, that's kind of made it a little bit different compared to, you know, the last 5-10 years when the funds are really pushing this market around. A lot of customers are really complaining, man, these funds are really pushing the market. Now we're asking them, hey, where are you at? Come back in.
They do bring that element into the market. I mean, we hate it when they run the prices down, but their presence in the market can really provide the volatility that producers can capitalize upon, correct?
Yeah. We need that volatility, and the fact is we need that excitement to come back into the market. They're the ones that push us to the – they'll bring us to the extreme, to the downside, where the customers are not happy or the producers are not happy, but the end users are really taking advantage of. But they'll be the also ones that will push us back up maybe to $4, $4.50 this summer if you can give them a reason to get excited. Plain and simple.
Does it also hurt a little bit that the equity market is doing so well? I mean, that gives these folks an opportunity to put their money into something that is performing at the moment.
Oh, I think that's probably what we're seeing right now. You're seeing your traditional fund traders, they're sticking in the axe, but you're seeing the money. If you want to buy something, you want to buy corn that's been trading at $3.50 now for 60 days, or you want to buy the stock market that's making, you know, just incredibly new highs. We got this tax proposal coming on here this week, and you know, that if that gets passed, it's probably going to accelerate the gains even more. So that's where the excitement is, and the money tends to go where it's excited.
How's this harvest going from your standpoint? There are some places in the Corn Belt where it's been very slow, well behind normal.
It is definitely a slower than normal pace for harvest. I don't think it's really having a huge impact in the market, per se. We've had such a huge carry-in right now. There was no shortage, so it's a grind. Some of it is helping out the dryer capacity. I know the corn's coming a little bit wet, so maybe slowing down a little bit is, you know, as these dryers try to keep up pace, but it'll get in. I mean, that's the one thing in my career I found. We always like to hype. We'll never get it planted. We like to hype. It's never going to get harvested, and we've got some big equipment, some very good farmers in the United States, and we always get it done.
Isn't that the truth? I mean, I've commented the same thing many times, that for all the hand-wringing over the planting season and for individual farmers, it can be gut-wrenching hand-wringing because they're worried about getting it in and getting a good stand, and you don't have a crop unless you get it planted. But we always get it planted, and somehow those acres always come in out of the field. Again, the individual farmer may worry about that downed corn and the possibility that it's going to be difficult to pick up, and I've heard that there have been some reels going out into the countryside in places like Michigan, for example, where they've had to worry about picking that corn up, but still, somehow, we get it in, and it's going to be big.
And it's going to be big, and yes, there are going to be some producers. I have some customers out in like western Nebraska. They're talking about some lost bushels to the ground, fall corn on the ground, but you know, as a big percentage, we've got a monster crop coming on us, and the fact is if we lose a few 100,000 bushels due to down corn, if you're that producer, it really stinks, but for the nation as a whole, it's a drop in the bucket, plain and simple.
My friend Fred from Iroquois County posted a picture this week on Facebook, and he showed some construction equipment moving down the road. He said they're getting ready to pile and sling corn. And I guess I hadn't thought about that phrase before, corn slinging, but at some of the elevators, indeed, they're getting ready to put it out there on the ground, which happens nearly every year, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you'll see it piles. It's a big, you know, a lot of people talk about it. They get, you know, it's interesting to see. You see these huge piles. It's, I mean, I saw a picture one time of a guy skiing down the pile of corn one time. But it's a normal, you know, it's normal. We see it. That'll be the first thing that goes, and it'll get picked up, and we'll get it consumed. Always do.
We've seen pictures of guys skiing down between the rows at planting time, too, you know, when they're waiting to get into the field in some instances. We have a crop report coming up in the week ahead. Thursday, USDA will release its November numbers, and I guess that'll be the actual last report ahead of the final numbers in January. What are you expecting to see? I mean, I'm seeing a corn number that's climbing higher in private estimates.
I think that's what we're going to see. I mean, I think as we start getting these estimates out, you're looking for 1 to 1.5 to maybe 2 bushels higher. It is going to be there. It looks like throughout the harvest, it's been pretty much amazing. I mean, talking to customers in Indiana, you know, they planted this crop once, twice. In some cases, 3 times, yeah. And they're still pulling 200-plus bushel of corn out. You ask them where it comes from, and they're like, I have no idea, Jim. It's there. I think the USDA is Indiana at 173 national league yield last month. That matches last year. So I would expect the corn crop to get a little bit bigger. The beans, on the other hand, they seem to be like the later beans. Maybe this dryness we saw in the last 6 weeks of the yield of production cycle might have took some of the very top end off of these later beans. So I think the trade's looking for the bean yield to be down a little bit. And that's also what's kind of propelling the beans up the last couple of weeks. I think the market's bracing and trying to buy into what's anticipated to be a slightly friendly number.
If that number doesn't slip, it could be bearish then for the bean market.
I would definitely believe so. I mean, we need a bullish number. The market's priced in. The trend's up. We've held the uptrend line to 200-day multiple times this past week. If we get a bearish number, don't be surprised to see this market unfortunately go rotate right back down and maybe test the October lows.
If indeed they do trim that number, it would be a very prominent reminder, would it not, of how much those days in August mean to a soybean crop with the kind of drier weather that we experienced.
Well, yeah, I definitely would agree with that. I mean, the old line is, you know, beans are made in August. And, you know, we had some of the driest weathers. It's pretty amazing. We went from flooding rains in northern Illinois in, you know, middle of July to just absolutely bone dry weather in late August. And, you know, it shows that how critical that rain is. And that'll just reemphasize what happens as we go into 2018. If we have a late dry summer from La Nina or something, that'll draw the trade's attention and get some of that excitement we're looking for.
We are seeing the planting of the crop in Brazil, and it appears that that's right about on schedule, isn't it? I mean, there was early concern about dryness, but when you look at all of the acreage down there, it seems to be very close to the average pace.
They're right, exactly. They're pretty much right where they should be. I mean, in general, the Brazilian farmers like the American farmer. They run big equipment, and they can get it in once the weather turns, and it turned. They got the moisture they wanted, and now they're planting. So right now, they're getting it in. Now we'll see what La Nina does. If it continues to build like a lot of these forecasters project, and that should give us some rainy problems potentially in like Argentina, and maybe that'll get the market a little bit excited.
With the acreage so spread out in South America, it makes it difficult, doesn't it, for a weather problem to really ignite the market anymore? I mean, it's got to be a very prominent, widespread one, and that's hard when you consider the longitude that is covered in the production of crops down there.
Yes, I would agree. I mean, the one thing, when I talk about a weather problem excited, you might get a 30, 40, 50-cent move. I would tell producers, you need to take advantage of it because exactly. Think about what the weather we went through this year. We had, I mean, there are a lot of people who were thinking all year long, these bean yields are going to be down. You know, the July WASDE, the August WASDE, the government surprised us by raising the yields. And as one person pointed out, you know, pretty much they plant the same seed down in South America as they do up here. So, you know, it's pretty much amazing what the technology is able to handle seed-wise.
And let the record show, they have the same technology in the cabs and with their equipment. They're quite advanced down there.
Yes, they are down there. So, I mean, the world right now, we need to see demand. China's demand continues to increase, and that's going to be the key, I think, overall to production agriculture right now is keeping that demand base strong.
There aren't any signs that that is going to weaken either. I mean, we have to really watch that and keep our fingers crossed because that is so crucial. That Chinese demand means all the difference of night and day to what happens to our soybean producers.
Well, exactly. Right now, that Chinese demand is It's been strong every year we've had a history. The government's underestimating the demand. It seems to be bigger than we anticipate. Probably the biggest problem we have that I'm looking at from my customers and telling them is the political ramifications. The president's going over in Asia. He's kind of waffled back and forth on being tough on China, currency manipulator, you know, slapping tariffs on them. Same thing with Mexico and NAFTA. And, you know, something we got to be a little bit leery about is a good example is what happened 30 years ago. 30 years ago, Jimmy Carter did the embargo on Russian wheat. We quit selling Russia the wheat. And look what happened. It took a while, dang near 30 years, but now Russia is planting all this wheat, and we're actually competing with them and losing market share to the Russians in the wheat market 30 years later. So, I mean, these political, if something would go wrong politically, and you encourage the Chinese to buy even more beans that say from South America, that would definitely be a detriment. So that's something the producers need to keep an eye on out of Washington.
Your example is a good one. And if we go back 40 years, it was embargoes at that time relative to the grain market and Japan, relative to making sure we had plenty of grain available, that forced the Japanese to invest heavily in South America. And look at the monster created there.
Yes. So, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, a little push here could have a huge impact 10, 20, 30 years down the line that we just don't know. So we want to see these trade deals come through. That is going to be very good for American agriculture if we can do it. If you look back historically, Max, almost every trade deal we've done in the last 30 years, American agriculture has really, you know, taking advantage of it, plain and simple.
Jim, it's good to have you in the studio. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
Jim McCormick from Allendale Incorporated. Chad Colby with us this morning, the ag tech expert. I grew up on a farm in Bureau County, Illinois. These days, he helps sell farm equipment in central Illinois, and he's all over the place. He's at the podium more often than the glass of water at meetings these days. Chad helps advise growers on ag technology, what's coming along, what's changing, and how to best utilize it. I'm going to have the opportunity to be on the program twice with you, Mr. Colby, during this month of November, and I'm looking forward to that. You'll be at the Farm Broadcasters meeting coming up next week in Kansas City, for one.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, Max. It's going to be great to speak to broadcasters and share them the latest and greatest in technology.
And then at the end of the month, you will be at the Ag Data Conference. We've been talking about that some on the air, but give us a little bit of a feel for what you're going to focus on at the Ag Data Conference.
You know, Max, I've actually fielded quite a few questions from farmers here that are starting to wrap up their harvest season, making their education plans, if you would, for the winter, and that's on everybody's radar. It's kind of a new conference. You know, my specialty is kind of like I said, the latest and greatest in technologies. I'm sure I'm going to talk about, you know, is your phone up to date? We've got new phones and new tablets. And then obviously, I've done a lot of research over the last, five, 6 years on drones and aviation and how that applies to agriculture. And there's a lot of great new things with satellite imagery and even sensors in the soil. And, you know, again, it's just talking about the latest and greatest. And truly, you know, a lot of farmers are starting to pay close attention where they're going to spend that next dollar on technology. So there's a really captive audience.
You said something about the phone being up to date. I mean, how crucial is that? Does everybody need an iPhone 10?
Here's what I tell growers is, you know, if you've got an iPhone 6 and below, you it's almost a must. You need to go upgrade your phone because the jump from a 6 to an 8 is unbelievable. And I don't mean just a fancy camera. I mean, it has better connectivity with your Wi-Fi and cellular. It stores more, it's faster. The hardest part for farmers to understand is they're not familiar with the gains. It gains so much. It's so much better. Most guys make that jump and then go, wow, I wish someone would have told me to do this. I would have went and done it. And, you know, especially for a farmer today, they're pretty much running most of their operation now on their smartphone or tablet. And it's really important to stay current with that technology.
During this harvest season, and we're progressing right along, the state of Illinois has done better than most of the major corn and soybean producing states. Still, there's going to be some crop out of the field quite a while yet, I guess. I know I'm digressing a little bit, but we have a fair amount of harvest yet to go, don't we, Chad?
Yeah, we sure do, Max. Like yourself, you and I talk to growers all over the country, and Illinois has really played catch up the last week to 10 days. But let me tell you, my friends in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, they're feeling the pressure. I this week talked to a good friend of mine up there, and he said, we're nervous. They're talking frost, so they're going to get their the windows closing for their tillage. And one of my buddies I talked to has got several thousand acres of corn to get out, and there's already snow in the forecast. Some places have got some snow here. Those guys are far, far from being done.
We worry about that crop still standing in the field, the possibility that it can get down. But the standability of these newer hybrids, the tougher stalk, is light years above and beyond what we saw even, 10 or 15 years ago, isn't it, Chad?
Yeah, Max, I agree with you 100%. But I'm going to tell you, we sold some equipment this past week up to Michigan only because it had a reel on the corn head, because one particular grower had 800 acres of corn that was laying flat. So there's certainly some pockets, and even my buddy from North Dakota last night was telling me that he's got one particular variety that was laying flat on the ground. He sent me pictures, and they were trying to obviously get that out first. But you know, you're right. Large percentage today, I would say corn is standing pretty well, but there's certainly you get this time of year, November rolls around, and it's time to get corn out of the field, because we know you can get some wicked weather this time of the year, too.
And when it's down, even if you have an attachment and can pick up quite a bit of it, it's a slow, painful harvest, isn't it?
Max, it's when you're used to sitting in a combine with your trucks and auger cart and the drying systems and all those other pieces in place of running a combine at 4.5 or 5 miles an hour, everything running smooth. And when corn's down, a lot of the times you're creeping through it. I mean, a mile an hour, maybe. And that's when things are dry and good. And you're right. It is a very cumbersome process. It's extremely hard on equipment because you're taking that much more material into the corn head and in through the combine. And obviously if that gets wet, that prohibits you to harvest it. It's a very, very tenuous task, that's for sure.
I talk about that other harvest, getting back to the technology for a moment. All this data that rolls in through the harvest season, has the analysis of that, for most farmers, has the analysis begun yet, or is that just ahead?
I think some of the newer technology we're seeing now from machine to machine, where two combines are talking to each other, and then they're using the cloud and cellular to take that data from the combine and put it together. I see more and more growers this year starting to look at that data sooner to make decisions on hybrids and their crop selection for 18. I've honestly seen more of that this year, Max, than I ever have. You got to remember, Max, it wasn't too long ago when the only way you got that data out was to take the card out and then take the card home and then put it in a computer and then rely on somebody else to produce those yield maps, where today you get that data right in the combine. And now if you got two combines in the field, they talk to each other. And a lot of your seedsmen today have the capability to see that data live in the combines. They're already getting the yield results. So that analysis starts earlier and earlier. And that's a big key. And that's one of the great ways this new technology, including your iPhone and your tablet, can get you that data quicker so you can help make a better decision.
In addition to making sure that your technological capability is there physically, from the standpoint of having the latest iPhone, upgrading your iPad, what else do you share with the growers about their important step to take to make sure that their data are ready and able to bring it all together and analyze it effectively?
Max, I think the big key today is the partnerships that you make. And whether that's with your seedsmen, your agronomist, other companies involved in the equation, right? Your machinery manufacturer, whoever that is. You got to have everybody on the same page, and no different than any other business. The farming business today really requires so much more on communication to make sure all those things are working in place. And a good example of that would be if I'm in a combine harvesting corn, I've got my iPad up there and I'm looking at that yield data. Well, when I pull out of that field today, it's real easy to click a couple buttons, send that yield map to my agronomist. They can make the prescription or the recommendations, if you would, for fertilizer applications. And maybe in the same day even, you send that to your fertilizer provider, he gets you a quote, the trucks come, you spread your fertilizer, you start the process. And I think that's the exciting part about this technology that you and I are so fortunate enough to see. And whether that's drone data or data from your planter or your combine, finally we're starting to talk about that workflow and how that can come back and really bring some benefits to the grower and really bring some benefits to the bottom line. And that's what's truly exciting. And it's going to be exciting over the next 2 or 3 years as that workflow gets better and better and better.
Finally, at that Ag Data Conference coming up at the Coralville Marriott Conference Center at the end of the month, you will be doing some demonstrating there, I understand. You'll have an unmanned aircraft or two, perhaps, with you.
You know, Max, it's hard telling what I might have with me. I'm sure I'll have some drones with me. I'll probably bring a thermal camera that's pretty neat that attaches to your cell phone. And, you know, I've got a new 360 camera that's kind of neat. Yes, I'll have some technology. It's hard for me to not.
Chad Colby, thank you, sir, for being with us on the Saturday Morning Show. We'll be together out there November 29th and 30th, the Coralville Marriott Conference Center, for that Ag Data Conference. Be a lot of good stuff there. Be fun. Well, for fun, I would say, for somebody like me to play with some of the technology, very serious technology used by the producers and used to great advantage to help them know better than ever what's going on in their fields. And as he pointed out, to share it with partners, and those partners include landowners, you know, the folks for whom these growers farm. They can share it with them on the iPad and say, look, this is what's happening in your field. Here's a problem spot in your field where we need to put some tile. Look what happened with the yields right in this area this year on this map. See, we want to make that better next year. So let's invest in some field tile to drain that problem. Well, that's just some of the technology that'll be displayed there coming up the end of the month. Well, up next on the Saturday Morning Show, we will talk with award-winning horticulturist Jim Fazell, our friend who's been around so many years advising and consulting with us. And yes, he was presented an award this week. Up next here on the Saturday Morning Show on WGN Radio. Well, Jim Fazell, we made it all through the gardening season. You took us through a Memorial Day and the 4th of July and Labor Day and First Frost. Oh, wait a minute. No, we're not there yet, are we?
No, we're not. Isn't that amazing? Here we are on the 4th of November. We have not had a frost. As I look out the window from my office this morning, I can see that the red bud is starting to turn yellow, and there are trees across the street that are still as green as can be. How can that be at this time of year?
Well, what has happened with the leaves? I mean, are we just skipping the color season altogether? We're going to go from green to brown and then no leaves?
Well, it looks that way, though. Sometimes in the past we've had very late color changes. I know some of the stuff is changing right now. I just mentioned the tree in our front yard. And as we go through the neighborhoods, we notice some of the maples are turning color, but just an awful lot of things are still green. I think it has to do with the fact that we had plants were really hardened off in the middle of summer because, you know, we went for a period from beginning of August to the beginning of October with less than an inch of rain. Fortunately, we didn't have a lot of high temperature at that time.
Right.
But since the beginning of October, we've had enough rain for the whole summer, 6.5 inches or more. But I think that may have something to do with the fact that trees were just hanging around, and now that we've gotten a little rain, a little mild weather, they're not going dormant. I don't like that, but that's what's happening.
Well, let's do a little Monday morning quarterbacking of the gardening season. How was it for you and from the folks you talked to?
Well, it wasn't a bad season. It seemed like it started late because it was so wet, but once it got going, it was pretty good. The middle of the season, it took some watering to keep things going because, as I mentioned before, it was pretty dry. Some people had some scattered showers at that time, pop-up type showers, when they were saying, "What do you mean it was dry?" Well, a lot of us it was dry, but there were some pop-up showers, and you know how those occur out in farmland. You can see that rain over there a quarter of a mile down the road, and you think it's going to get to you, and by golly, it never does. It just goes on, and you drive down, and you find out, yep, it was 500 feet wide, and that's all there was, and you didn't get any. Well, that was the way it was through much of the area where there was spotty rain. When that happens, stuff kind of just sits there, and if you don't put water on, eventually things just don't grow at all. Now, I know a lot of folks were having trouble with tomatoes because, first of all, when it's that dry, blossom end rot seems to be kind of bad. But then if you do put water on, then you get cracking. So you need to have a rather consistent amount of moisture. But I think most people had a reasonably good gardening year. It wasn't one of the best years we've ever had, but reasonably good.
This is kind of a good time, isn't it, to write some of that down before you forget it in the cold of winter, so you can do a little bit of planning for the gardening next season when the catalogs start to arrive.
You know, we talked various times about starting a garden journal, which I keep. I put all kinds of things in there when something happens, and I've had this thing now for probably the last 30 years. It's just a loose-leaf notebook, or actually mine is one of these spiral binders, and you put the year up at the top of the page, and then when something happens, like you're starting your seeds, or you got rain, or you didn't get rain, or it was 90 degrees for 5 days, you just record all that stuff in there, and then you can look back, and especially at the end of the season, you can make notes and say, yeah, that weather really hurt, or that weather really was good for the plants. We had a good season or a crummy season. It also it pays to write down what the varieties were that you grew, because a lot of times we try things that don't work too well, and if we don't write that down, that we planted such and such bean and it was terrible, we're apt to repeat the same mistake later. So I keep track of that kind of thing. Or if you have a variety that does exceptionally well, write that down. And it doesn't hurt then to write down where you got it, the seed catalog or the garden store where you bought those seeds, so that you do have a record of what happened. That's rather important in gardening. You know, I've been gardening on the same plot of land now for 45 years, and I've gotten to know it. It's changed over the years, strangely enough, but I also know that where we've put in a lot of organic matter over the years, it's better, and where we kind of skimped on that and didn't take the time or trouble to do it, it's not quite as good. And the plants show that as they're growing. They'll show that the soil is fertile and friable, or that the soil is compacted. A lot of times you can tell when you're starting to plant that you can't get that part of the garden dug, because the clay that we have in there really is tough. When in some years, it can be like a brick, but if you have a lot of organic matter in it, it's very friable.
In regard to that record keeping, I tend to hold on to the seed packets. Generally in the spring, when I put in that seed, I'll make a little notation on the packet, put the date on there, and maybe a notation about where it went in, and stick it in a cigar box somewhere, an old cigar box, so I can come back to it and refer to it later.
Well, mine's a cardboard box. I do the exact same thing. I didn't realize I wasn't the only one doing that, but I do it too, because it's nice to look back in those seed packets. Then you can tell who they were, who it was, where
sure.
It was grown a lot of times, the variety, the exact variety, the seed lot, and so forth. Just hang on to them. It doesn't hurt. You mentioned a little bit about where you planted it. You know, as you're going through your gardening year, it doesn't hurt to make a map of the garden. It just can be as informal as possible and write down, you know, this is where the corn was. This is where the beans were. Here's where the squash was. That's nice to do for one reason, and that's if you're in a situation where you want to rotate things like tomatoes. You don't like to plant tomatoes too many years in the same place. Well, you can look back and say, oh, yeah, for 3 years the tomatoes have been there. I think I'll move them.
Finally, sir, congratulations to you on honors bestowed upon you by the Illinois Landscape Contractors Association this week.
Well, thank you, Max. That is indeed a distinctive honor, and I think there are only six other people that have been honored this way.
They made you a lifetime member.
Yes, it's really a humbling thing to receive. That means that a lot of years have been spent there. And actually, you know, when I look at that organization from the time it started, the infancy, to what a magnificent organization is now, it's really an honor to be and a pleasure to have been a part of that. So this is an honor that recognizes that.
Well, it's well-deserved, sir. Thanks a lot for taking the time to join us this morning. We appreciate it. Hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving season. You and Jane?
Well, and you too, Max. Good talking to you.
Thank you. Jim Fazell, consulting horticulturist, James A. Fazell and Associates. And I just thought of what the stark contrast in the discussion between Jim Fazell and myself and Chad Colby and myself. Here Jim and I were talking about writing on the back of a seed packet and writing in a journal by hand the seeds that we were planting and the results that we got. And then Chad and I, a few minutes ago, were talking about the modern technology of the commercial farmer, as he or she knows exactly the seed and the seed planting rate and exactly where they put it in the field, because it is in the technology that is logged from their planter, and it's available on the iPad. And now, after the harvest, that same field can be viewed as to what the results were. A little bit of a difference between that and my cigar box, huh? Shout out to Jake in LaPorte County this morning. Jake, work safely over there, pal. I know you're trying to beat the rain. He's out of the field. It's kind of interesting. You look at the harvest progress. Northern Illinois and northern Indiana are almost the same. I mean, as this week began across northern Indiana, there was, they may be a little more advanced than northern Illinois. As the week started, there was still 52%. No, the northern Indiana was 52% harvested on the corn crop. Northern Illinois still had more than 50% of the corn remaining out of the field. Soybean harvest still about 20% left out of the fields of northern Illinois and northern Indiana as this week began. So as the rains are advancing through the area, growers like Jake are trying to get as much done as quickly as possible, knowing that this is going to be another one of those delays. So again, those of you still working in the field and feeling a little bit of pressure, please work carefully. These times like this is when some of our accidents occur. Well, we'll go outside the loop here, coming up in the next hour on WGN Radio. Corn and soybean growers, we invite you to come and learn how to turn practical data and technology into profitable decisions at the second annual Ag Data Conference. It'll be going on at Coralville, Iowa, coming up the end of November. Making sense of precision technology and the data layers derived from it are key to improving your corn and soybean return on investment. And the best way to learn is from actual experience of other farmers and their advisors, along with a hands-on look at the data products, the drones, and the services that drive success. You'll gain insight and more from the Ag Data Conference, designed by the editors of Farm Progress Information brands Corn Soybean Digest and Farm Futures. Get all the information of the Ag Data Conference by going to the website, theagdataconference.com. It's November 29th and 30th at the Coralville Marriott Hotel near Iowa City, Iowa. Theagdataconference.com. Hey, follow me on Twitter if you care to, at Max Armstrong. I'd appreciate that. Thanks to Big O, Orion Samuelson, and Bob Ferguson for their help here on the Saturday morning show. Mr. Steven, how are you,
I
rascal?
Follow you on Twitter, and it's glorious. It's just well, glorious.
We have a little fun there. We put some strange things out there every now and then.
That's true. How are you doing?
Real good, sir. Thank you.
Good.
What's
good.
Coming up here?
Well, we've got a really cool show. We're talking about the effect of... Now, here's a question for you. Do you use Uber or Lyft?
I'm an Uber guy.
You're an Uber guy. Okay, so am I. So am I. But there was a study that came out about how using these ride-sharing apps affects public transportation in big cities.
Oh, yeah, I know. I heard that report that just the other day. That
it's big.
It's hurting the
public transportation.
Yeah, the load factor, I guess, on the trains.
Right, right. Yeah. So there's that. And then we have a political campaign manager coming in, not to talk about like his candidate, but just to talk about what it's like to work on a political campaign for governor.
That's got to be wild. Just crazy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
In the final run-up to the election, it must get nuts.
Not a lot of sleep. Not a lot of sleep.
Not for the faint of heart.
That's
well,
true.
Well, Mr. Baddish would know about that. We should talk to him about that sometime.
Yeah, what, no sleep?
He doesn't sleep. He doesn't sleep. He doesn't need sleep, though. He's Roger Baddish. Max, always great talking to you, man.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you so much. Take care.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.